You're listening to the Net Mums podcast with me, Wendy Gollidge.
And me, Alison Perry. Coming up on this week's show...
A newspaper had found out I was pregnant because I had terrible pregnancy sickness. So I was working on BBC Breakfast and I literally was like chucking up behind the sofa. That famous red sofa's probably got a few stains down the back.
Splashes, don't mention. Yeah. But before all of that, this episode of the Net Mums podcast is brought to you by Tesco.
Well, that makes me happy, Wendy, because there's nothing I love more than a solo trip to my nearest big Tesco.
You're not going to be the only happy one, Alison, because the Tesco baby and toddler event is back.
Parents across the country are rejoicing. Tell us what we can expect.
There will be money-saving offers on a wide range of baby and toddler products, from food and clothing to bathroom and hygiene essentials.
You had me at money-saving.
Yep. Customers will be able to get up to 50% off. Some of my favourite bargains include the half-price Joe Romano co-sleeping crib, which is only £80, and money off a very snazzy VTech smart Wi-Fi video monitor.
Tesco really is a one-stop shop for all of your baby and toddler needs, isn't it? I'm loving the cute safari design sleep suits at only £10 for a three-pack.
They have so much. There's nappies, toiletries, and the snuggliest baby outfits. But hurry, because the baby and toddler event is only on for a limited time.
To find out more, head in store or online at tesco.com. Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Net Mums podcast. Wendy, how are you doing? How's your weekend been?
It was good, thank you. We went to a wedding. But what was a shock is it's the first wedding I've been to since my 30s when I didn't have kids. And it was all a bit interesting being at a wedding with children because you actually have to look after them and make sure they've been fed. And it was 30 degrees, so make sure they've got sun cream on. And I was like, oh, maybe this is why people get married in their 30s, so you don't have your kids.
Did it take the edge off a little bit for you, Wendy?
Well, yeah, just a little bit. But they did have a good time. So I wonder if our guest has been to any weddings yet with children in tow. Let's have your showbiz intro, Alison.
Well, today we are joined by Steph McGovern, BAFTA-nominated TV broadcaster, business journalist and co-presenter of the podcast The Rest Is Money. Steph's debut novel, Deadline, has just been published and it's been described as a pacey, engaging thriller. Steph, a warm welcome to the Net Mums podcast.
Hello, thank you for having me. And do you know what? I was smiling the whole way through the intro because I too was at a wedding at the weekend with my five-year-old. And that combination, Wendy, you described of the heat and the thinking about food and everything else was intense. And then also just the general, where is my child? Has anyone seen her for like the last 20 minutes?
It's all safe though. Weddings are usually quite enclosed, aren't they? So I'm sure she was fine.
Well, this wedding had sweetie jars, like she'd had put sweetie jars. And at one point, about 20 past 10, I sprung a load of 5 to 9 year olds under a table, under like the tablecloths, stuffing sweets in their mouth because they'd all been told by their parents it's 10 p.m. you can't have any more sweets. So it all went quite debauched for the kids, let alone the adults.
They would love that though if you did that. There's nothing better when you're a kid than a den with something you're not meant to have in it. Sweets is ideal.
So other than hot at weddings, what's mum life looking like for you right now? The end of term is looming. Yes. Is it a stagger towards the finish line like the rest of us?
Do you know, it is and it isn't, in the sense of we're all doing that juggle, aren't we, with work and childcare and everything else. And that, I feel like I'm always kind of staggering through. I don't feel like I'm ever like full energy, you know, pacing through gazelle like. I'm literally like a sloth the whole time, like crawling through to the end of everything. But I mean, like having a five-year-old, she's now at that point where she's really fun. And actually, she gets herself ready for school and she likes that. Like she's now enjoying that independence. No, I can do it, Mama. I can do it. And so I love walking her to school. Like, I'm really lucky because I live near the sea. And so we walk along the seafront to school, which is, you know, totally brassic in the winter. But at this point of the year, it's just lovely. And so I'm really, I don't know whether it's overtiredness, which has led to delusion. And I think, like, this is all great. And actually, I don't know, failing at other things. But I'm really enjoying this bit. Don't get me wrong, the WhatsApp group now with everyone is like, what are we all going to do over the summer? But it's lovely these last few weeks. And she's just finishing reception, so it feels like, wow, you've done a year already. That's mad.
Well, as this is going out in early July, I just feel like we should, Alison, do a little public service announcement for all of the parents listening to not wait till the last week of term to do the teacher gift, which is what I do every single year. Yeah. So everyone listening who's got children at school, just remember to buy them a box of chocolates in your next Asda shop rather than doing it at the end of the day on the last day before term, I do every single year.
Good work, Wendy. Good work. You've got everyone's interest at heart there. I like it. Now, Steph, you are impressively private about your family life. What made you decide to not share any photos or details of your daughter from day one?
I think it's because she's not chosen this life. And also with the profile, and, you know, my profile's meant I've had a great career and done lots of brilliant things. But with it comes a lot of scrutiny. And I don't want her to be scrutinised by people who don't know her yet. She'll have enough of that with just, you know, school and everything else. So for me, I'm really glad I did it. I made a really conscious effort when I first started in telly to not talk about my relationships. And that is just carried on from that, because that served me really well, because, you know, my partner doesn't have to ever worry about what people might write about her, and that's kind of carried on with our child. They can live without having to worry about that. I mean, it's tricky at times because, you know, like, my family would love to post pictures on their social media, but we've had to have like a really hard line about it and go, you can't, because as soon as you do that, then that opens the, you know, the floodgates, and then her picture can be published and blah blah blah. So that's a bit tricky, that, you know, particularly grandparents can't post pictures because they've got other grandkids, and so they're a bit like, well, we post the others, it looks like we don't love her. And you're like, no, it doesn't. I think people understand because of my job, but on the whole, I'm glad. Although it's been funny because recently she's just worked out that what I do is a job. And so she said to me the other day, she was like, are you famous? And I was like, well, to some people. And so she said, because someone at school told me you were famous. And she's like, what does it mean? And I said, well, it means some people who know me, I don't know them, but they know me. And she went, right. You know me and I know you, so you're not famous to me, are you? And I said, correct. And that's the way we've worked it out.
I love it.
Yeah. And so that's been... So then when people have stopped us in the street, and she's much more of aware of it now, we'll walk away and she'll go, do you know them? And I'll go, no, I don't know them. And she'll go, right, so you're famous to them. And I'll be like, kind of, yeah.
That's cute. I love the way her little brain has assimilated that and decided that this is what being famous means.
Yeah, yeah.
So we saw a gorgeous note you shared on Instagram recently that your daughter calls you and your partner mummy and mama.
Yeah.
What kind of roles have you two carved out? Is one of you good cop, one of you bad cop?
Do you know, I think we don't have like defined roles. Like sometimes one of us might tell her off and the other one is the one who goes, oh, don't worry or whatever. But it doesn't have like I'm tougher than my partner or anything. I think we're fairly similar. So, you know, and I think sometimes we'll pull each other up and go, you were a bit tough on her there. Like I'm a real stickler for manners. So I'm obsessed that she has to have good manners. So no matter what, I'm like, thank you, please. And the other day I said to her a couple of times that day, because at the wedding, actually, every time someone said something to her, like, that's a nice dress you've got. And I'd be like, say thank you. And she was getting quieter and quieter at saying it. It's like, thanks. And I went, you need to say thank you. And she's like, I've said it. Will you stop telling me off all the time? I've said thank you. And I went, they couldn't hear you though. And my partner was a bit like, I think you are being a bit harsh, she is saying it. And you're like, all right. So, but yeah, I don't think... We don't like really have. I think we're both quite similar, which is good.
That's good. Now, you've spoken in the past about how being your true, authentic self is important to you, whether that's embracing your accent or your identity. How do you think that feeds into how you and your partner parent your daughter?
Well, I think it's just letting her do what she wants, but obviously within the boundaries of, you know, general behaviour and things. But like, I did dancing growing up and I loved it. And so, you know, we've been trying out different things with her to see what she kind of likes and what she doesn't. And I think for us, we're not forcing her to do anything. And so it's like, if we were doing gymnastics for a bit and then realised she actually didn't really enjoy it. And so we were like, right, well, we just won't do that anymore. We can try something else. So I think it's just about I think it took me a while to realise I could just be myself and still do well in life. And there'll be times when she'll probably feel like she might have to be a bit different in order to fit in. And I think that's only natural to go through that. But I think it's just, without like overtly saying, oh, you know, be yourself. I think it's just creating an atmosphere in which she feels like she can do the things she wants to do. Like an example the other day was one of her little friends was, who she loves, they're really good friends. One of her little friends was saying, oh, come on, I want to play this game. And my little girls are kind of quite a pleaser. And she was like, okay, then. And I said, you didn't want to play that game, did you? And she went, no, but it's okay, because she wanted to play. And I went, it's okay to say no, though, if you don't want to play. Or you can say, let's play your game this time, and then can we play mine? And she was like, okay, but that might make her sad. I was like, no, but then she'll have to deal with that. So I don't know. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's stuff I'm sure I'm getting wrong with her. Like, and, you know, I get one of the things I really felt about a year ago was because of my job, was like, I don't want her to be a show off. So I've been like, right, don't show off about things. But I think I'd gone too extreme. And actually she then was like really staying at the back of every time they did an activity. She'd go at the back of the line and wait, and then I thought, oh god, that's me, like, you know, forcing on the don't be a show off, and now it's gone too far the other way. And so I think, you know, we're learning every day still about, well, we all are, aren't we? You guys will be the same. You get through a week and you think, oh brilliant, we've nailed that, but then the next week there's a new challenge and you're like, right, how are we gonna do this?
Oh yes. I saw an article actually on Netmums last week saying parents of girls are more stressed than parents of boys. As the parents of six girls between the two of us, I suspect Alison and I might agree. Can you relate?
Yeah. I have this. Totally. I have this with my one of my friends who's the mum of a boy. And they're like, and we were saying we hate like those gender stereotypes of kids, but they do, I think, innately do things which are feminine and masculine. Like the boys do run around and like batter each other essentially, and the girls are a lot more sensitive. And her and I, me and my mate, were talking about this, saying, your son's wild now, but I just know we're gonna have loads of drama with the girls, because I can already feel it. Just like, girls are proper mean, aren't they? And you just think, oh, I know in the future my mate's going to be laughing while I have to deal with the fallout of, you know, whatever teenage drama's going on. And also hormones, like, you know, I think we're pretty hard on teenage girls actually, because it's really extreme going through all that hormonal change and everything else going on with your body. And we still expect them to behave the same as they did before the hormones. And I think I'm appreciating that from a like perimenopausal, I think I'm entering that stage. And I'm like, you know, my moods are mad and my general, like, you know, one minute I'm crying and the next minute I'm hysterically laughing. And you're like, but I'm expecting people to acknowledge that about me. Why? We should make sure our teenage girls not support, it's the wrong word, but just not expected to behave in exactly the same way. But yeah, I don't know. It is a minefield with girls, but I do love girls more. Hence why I'm gay, actually, but you know.
It makes sense. Yeah. And actually, that leads me on to my next question, which is that we're recording this at the very end of Pride Month. I'm really curious to know whether that's something that you celebrate at home. Do you go on any family marches? Do you chat about it with your daughter?
Do you know, we don't, not because we're not proud, but it's just normal life. It's not, you know, we've talked about what it's going to be like when she, if anyone bullies her about having two mums or whatever and not having a dad and things. But so far, it hasn't come up. It's not, we kind of just live our normal life, and that's the way we're proud, I think. We don't try and point, you know, make a point of difference about it. We just say, well, we don't say anything. And, you know, there's been times where, it was actually funny, I was on a school trip the other day and one of the dads was chatting to me and I'd said something about my daughter and said, oh, her other mum. And he went, oh, she got two mums. And I was thinking, all right, love, there's no need to like go on big thing. But then what I realised was, because he then followed it up with, that will explain why my daughter came home the other day and asked if she could swap me for another mum. And I was like, because he was like, I couldn't understand where she'd got it from. And so then I just laughed and thought, yeah. And then a couple of the other parents were like, oh yeah, we've all had that. We've all had the, can we swap dad for another mum?
Those poor dads.
I know, because I know. But I just laughed. And, you know, I think we are lucky. We've got plenty of, like, men in our lives to you know, fulfil that role. She's got two granddads and stuff like that. So she understands that not everyone has, she definitely understands that not everyone has two mums or two dads, but she also knows that people have only got one mum and people haven't got grandparents and some people do. So it's kind of fairly normal to them all at this age. They don't really see it as a point of difference.
Do you think the landscape and attitudes have changed for same-sex parents since you had your daughter?
Yeah, because like, we were really scared, actually, when, not scared, maybe the wrong word, but anxious when it came out that I was pregnant, because I'd obviously kept everything private up to that point that I was even in a relationship. And then a newspaper had found out I was pregnant because I had terrible pregnancy sickness. So I was working on BBC Breakfast and I literally was like chucking up behind the sofa. Oh. That famous red sofa's probably got a few stains down the back.
Splashes, don't mention. Yeah.
So then obviously they realised it wasn't me hungover every day and there must be more to it. And so it was going to be published in the papers. And I remember thinking, I didn't want to hide like that it was, you know, two women having a child, because I've never not, I've never been in, you know, like when people say, what was it like coming out? I don't feel like I've ever been in, as it were, but I just don't talk about things, my relationships publicly, but obviously it was going to come out as part of this. And I remember I said to my partner, I was like, this is probably going to get quite a few headlines, so maybe we should just take ourselves off for the weekend. And we went to Wensleydale. There's this lovely hotel there that we love. I know, it instantly makes you think of Wallace and Gromit. And cheese. So, cheese, more cheese. And there's this great hotel there. So we went there and I remember we were going down for breakfast and it was in the papers and we sat down and there was this elderly couple sat across breakfast from us and one of them was reading the newspaper and they just looked over and realised it was us and they just said, congratulations to both of you.
Oh,
and I like, even now that it, like, I've literally got goosebumps every time. And it was that, you know, because they were a lot older than us and you can often think the generations above don't get it. And they just, in that moment, just, they chilled us out and made us feel accepted and that it was, everything was going to, like, it was, oh God, I'm getting emotional talking about it, but it was like, everything's going to be all right. And so then, yeah, and that was such a moment. And I don't think, I mean, I couldn't tell you what that couple looked like now and they probably have forgotten they ever said it to us. But that was a real moment of just, actually, this world is good. It's going to be all right. It's more accepting than we think.
That's so lovely. Now, I love how you've talked before about splitting childcare and home life fairly equally with your partner. How does that work in practice, especially with you having kind of such a busy job? And have you got any top tips for someone listening who might be feeling like things aren't quite so balanced in their home life?
I think the key thing is you don't worry if it's not balanced. like, even if... So for us, like, we've both got big jobs and we have to travel for work and things. I mean, I don't know how anyone does it without grandparents, for a start. Like, we're really lucky that we have, you know, my mum and dad are quite close by. That was the part of the reason we moved back to the Northeast. So I don't know how anyone does it without it, without them. And we are like a spreadsheet family. We are one of those families, you know, who we're not quite at the Google share calendar like my mates round the corner, who's, you know, one of them's a policeman and one's a teacher, and they have to work everything out on like a color coded. That blows my mind every time they talk about their calendar. But no, we basically just email each other once a week and go, right, I'm going to be here. Where do you need to be? And then we'll work out where the gaps are and either ask, you know, parents or maybe call in a favour from a, you know, one of the other parents in the school. And we all do that. Like, I do definitely believe in that. It's a community, like a village that brings up a kid. It never really meant anything to me before. I was like, yeah, it's one of those things you get on a board that you put up in your house and next to it's wine o'clock somewhere, you know, that kind of thing. And but then I realized, no, that's true. And I don't think you should worry if you're not, like, because I'm away quite a bit, and it's like, sometimes when I feel guilty about it, I'm then reminded, actually, you know, my daughter understands what's going on. She really understands the concept of work gets us holidays, and she likes going on holidays. So therefore, you know, like she said to me the other day, can you go to work again next week? Because I'd really like to go on holiday. And you're like, yeah, I'm glad you understand. But I just, and there's times when it absolutely goes to in a mess and you're like, ah, we got it wrong and we haven't got this and we have to call on an auntie or whoever to help us. And I think it's really hard if you don't have that. If you don't have, you know, and I know there's lots of people who don't, and I really feel for them because that's tricky. But yeah, it's just, it's fine to make mistakes as well. You know, like, I love the series Motherland, and I just think, you know, there's times where we're nearly, you know, someone, every character in it, you know them. And I am that person who's bought cakes and is secretly taking off all the wrappers and putting them in a box and going, there you go, darling, there's the cakes for the whatever.
I don't even take the wrapper off. I just hand the shop-bought cakes to the bake sale. I'm just like, here you go, sell them.
I know. And I just think, and also there's like this, I'm in a really good group chat with the parents, and actually in it, like this morning, because the weather's so hot, all the kids are allowed to be in the PE kit for the week. And obviously half of us have forgotten. And in the WhatsApp this morning at 7 a.m, it was like, PE kit alert, everyone. And we're like, oh God, Lizzie, thank you for reminding us. And then don't forget it's sports day on the, thank you, we'd forgotten. And so... Yeah,
oh, the I think good it's and bad just, of the parent WhatsApp group. All well, the good stuff. There's some bad.
I know. Well, I keep out of them all. I try and keep out of them because, like you were mentioning about the present for the teacher, and I was at swimming yesterday with my little girl and a couple of the other parents and my partner. And my partner and this other woman, who's a mum, were chatting about the teacher present thing. And I went, what am I missing here? What are you on about? And they went, just keep out of it, Steph. Don't get involved. This is it's too much. And I was like, great, thanks.
As long as one of you is on top of it, that's all you need.
Yeah.
This is just a quick reminder that this episode of the Net Mums podcast is brought to you by Tesco's Baby and Toddler event.
Head in store to see all of the brilliant money-saving offers or visit tesco.com. So taking you back a bit to the baby days, you've talked about how you suffered from night terrors thinking that you'd lost or dropped your daughter. Yeah. And I used to do similar things, like wake up in the middle of the night thinking, oh my God, those early new mum days, is there anything you'd have done differently now to look after your mental well-being?
Well, it was also lockdown, so I don't.
So your mental well-being was in pieces anyway, right?
I genuinely don't think I could have done it differently because we couldn't do anything, you know, like it's not like you could go out and see friends or whatever. It was, you know, I remember that time when it was illegal to sit on a park bench. The night terrors are a thing I've always had, and I kind of have just got used to them. And I mean, my daughter's getting them now, which is annoying because they are, you know, they're quite frightening to see. My dad gets them. So, you know, I wonder if there's some type of
that's on a gene or whatever. Somewhere.
Yeah. I just think hindsight, great, but no, would I have done anything differently? probably not. And I'm not someone who looks back and thinks, how could I have done things differently? Unless I've got something coming up that is going to be a repetition of it, then I just don't. I just forget once I've done it. I can barely remember the baby days, to be honest. I can, you know, a friend who's just had a baby recently was asking me something about what age they start doing something. And I'm like, I don't know. I can't remember that far back. When did they start eating solid food? I don't know. I can't remember any of it. I just forget it once.
It does feel like it's a thing, though, because you, as a parent, there's always a new stage. I do feel like that when you're taking on the information, any information you don't need just drops out. It has
Absolutely.
It has to.
Yeah. Don't you do that in, I do that in my work as well. I've been filming something recently and then, I had all the scripts in my head and everything. And then 2 days later, we had to refilm something. And they were like, oh, can you do that script again? I was like, I've totally, that's gone now. It's gone. That went 2 days ago. But I think we're all doing that. You're just constantly making room in your head, aren't you, for the other bits you need to know.
We're still so busy. Now, bearing in mind, you have just said that you've forgotten everything. My next question was, what was the best advice that you got in the baby days? Can you just go back into the depths of your memory and think about what the one bit of advice that you were like, that was amazing, and I want to pass it on to either that new mum friend that you mentioned just now or the listener?
Yeah. I think it's always have like a muslin cloth or some type of thing with you, like that can, because you'll just get covered in muck and stuff all the time. And like, you know, some type of, maybe not wipes, but just something there always to clear up mess, which inevitably follows you around.
Yeah.
So that, but also just the don't listen to everyone. Everyone's got an opinion on when they should, you know, when they should be talking and when they should not have a dummy and when they should be potty trained. And again, we didn't do NCT or anything like that when we had our little girl, because I just was like, I don't want to hear everyone else's stories. I just want to do it myself. Like, given the fact that we've all been having babies for however long, you know, since the beginning of time, I was like, everyone's been all right, so on the whole, you know, obviously not everyone, but like on the whole.
And the population has continued, therefore we can't all be getting it that long.
Yes, so I didn't massively take advice and things from people.
That's really good, like, though, because I did the opposite. I took everybody's advice and then sat in a little ball going, I don't know what to do, because I didn't know what to believe. So
yeah,
I think that's really good to just go, no, I'm going to do this my way.
Yeah. And everyone's experiences are totally different. So, and I think sometimes we can feel bad if we think our experience has, like, particularly the birth, everyone's birth stories are so wildly different that you can make, people can feel bad if theirs isn't like some kind of utopia pregnant, you know, birth of in a pool in the house with the CD playing on that they picked and all that. And then if it isn't that, people are like, oh, I didn't get the one I wanted. So that's kind of why I went into it with no expectations. I was just like, let's just go for it and see what happens, which is my whole career to date. It really is. It's like everything I've ever done is just, let's just have a go, and then if it doesn't go well, well, there we are.
So you're a business journalist by trade and you present the Rest is Money podcast. So let's just talk a little bit about money. Netmum's recently reported that raising a child in the UK until the age of 18 is estimated to cost 260 grand if you're a couple, 290 grand if you're a single parent. So you know your way around money and numbers, but for many, me included, it's just mind-boggling. Have you got any advice for families out there trying to budget and kind of struggling with all of it?
Yeah, it is. Kids are so expensive. And lots of people, lots of, you know, activities and things, they play on the fact that they can kind of charge what they like for stuff. So, it is really tough. I think the things for me, and I think this goes for anyone, you don't have to be a parent, but just, If you can follow your money as much as you can, i.e. just really keep on top of what's coming in and going out, and don't do that thing of putting your head in the sand, because that's where you'll see where you are potentially wasting money. Wasting feels like too strong of a word, but like could economise better. So, and there are loads of apps to help you do that now. So that every time you buy something and get a receipt, take a photo of the receipt, and there's lots of different apps which will then put it into, you know, a little pie chart or however you want it visualised. So you can see, and you might think, oh, I've been spending, I only get one coffee a day or whatever. And you might suddenly go, oh my God, my coffees are 50 quid a month. Right, maybe I'll cut back on one or the other. And I don't want to be a fun sponge who's telling everyone to cut back. But you might, you know, there's a lot of technology and apps out there that can really help you. There's also like things that can see when your subscriptions are auto-renewing, and it'll stop them auto-renewing. And just your time poor when you've got kids as well. So I think it's just anything that can do those menial tasks for you to try and save your money. And also, when you are spending money, I'm a big believer of make your money pay, in the sense of don't just buy stuff without collecting points and things. So if you, I buy everything on a credit card and make sure I pay off the credit card every month and get points on it. So I've got one that gets air miles, and then that really helps because I obviously have to travel quite a bit. And but you know, it doesn't have to be that. It can be like the Avios or whatever it is. There's lots of ways, as long as, and like I say, with credit cards, they're dangerous in the sense you can rack up loads of debt. You need to be paying it off so you're not paying interest. But for me, it's like, don't just give your money away for nothing. Try and earn stuff back on your money, and that type of thing can soon add up and save you, you know, and give you things that without having to fork out loads of dough.
Our bank account gives us points, and my husband converts them into Greg's vouchers. So we get,
amazing.
But it means that we can take the rolls. Kids down for like sausage rolls and a fruit shoot or whatever, and it's like a free little Saturday afternoon treat. Yeah. So not the same as flights, but you know, it's just as good.
No,
for us.
But whatever works for you, yeah. No, I love that, sausage rolls. I spend a lot of money on sausage rolls, actually.
Good way. Now, do you think that kids should be taught more about managing finances at school? So things like saving and investing, and actually, you know, how the world of money works.
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt, I think it's an absolute shocking state of the nation that we do not teach kids money from nursery. Like, kids, no matter what you do in your life, money is part of it. And the fact it isn't taught from, you know, there's a kind of vulgarity that's viewed about money. Oh, no, let the kids just play and be creative. No, they need to understand money to understand their parents and the pressures on their parents. They need to understand money for their own financial and mental well-being for when they're older. So this is my big beef, because I work with a charity that teaches money in schools, and right from nursery, you know, they teach what the coins are. It's a bit trickier now because everything's kind of like, you know, on your Apple Pay or whatever.
But
else.
I think that makes it harder to teach kids money.
Yes,
because when you've got £1.75 in coins, and that's what you can go and spend in the shop, it's a really physical thing. You can see your money, and you can see that the lolly is £1.80, so you don't have enough. But when it's just tap, 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 like, how are they ever expected to understand what something costs when it's just all virtual?
Yeah. No, I totally hear you. It is a lot harder, but their minds, they are in the generation now where everything is digital to them anyway. So like, they understand the concept of like gamification, and you know, if they're playing a game, they understand the concept of points, and then those points can be used in the online shops or whatever. So I think it's us that need to.
So it's just
out.
I'm an old bag. Fine, I'm with you. That's fine.
I wouldn't
That's
go that far. But there's lots of accounts now that allow you to, you know, there's one like GoHenry where they give you can have your own personalized with your photo on little card and like a debit card and things. You can get that from quite a young age, and then you can, you know, you can see there's a good user interface on the apps with them all, because that's where the kids are now. Like, they can see, they totally, we all know they totally can see, use iPads and everything else better than us. So I just think it's not shying away from them seeing that, like, and saying to them, yeah, that lolly is £1.75, and let's have a look in your account. Oh, you've got £5 there. And then just do a bit of maths with them as well. Right, what's that £5 take away £1.75? I do this with my daughter all the time. Even if she asks me the time for something, you know, what time are we doing this, I'll say, well, the time, you know, or she'll say, how long is it until something? And I'll say, well, the time now is this time, and then the time we're doing it is this time. So work it out. And so then, you know, I'm sure she hates me for it. But I think we shy away from it. But that's not our fault either. I think it's been ingrained in people's heads that maths is hard and maths isn't fun. And therefore, loads of people will say, I'm not very good at maths. And I bet they are. I bet they do things in their life, which means they're good at maths, whether it's, I don't know, playing bingo or like doing other things in their life, doing baking where you have to understand ingredients and measurements. And so there'll be loads of, it's just, in education, it's never tangible. It's always just some like esoteric, oh, let's work out the angle of a triangle using, you know, trigonometry or whatever. And you're like, well, no, man, let's do compound interest on credit cards. Or let's talk about what is council tax and where does it go? And I'm not taking away from the pure mathematicians of the world. Absolutely go and fill your boots with it. But all kids should be able to come out of school just knowing what these things are, because that's what gets them in trouble, is not understanding it and then being like, just I wasn't very good at maths at school, and it's not the same thing. That's my rant, Soz.
Loved it.
So we've mentioned your first novel, Deadline, comes out very soon. How did you find the time to write a book on top of TV, podcast, family, life, having the occasional wee, all the things that you might want to do? How'd you fit it all in?
Well, so this is funny, right? Because the reason I wrote it is because I, in lockdown, when everyone, you know, obviously I had my little girl then, but obviously that when they're a newborn, there's also mad bits of time where you kind of, you know, you can't quite sleep and you're all over the shop. And then it was lockdown. And while I hate cooking, I'm not a baker, I'm not a cook, blah, blah, blah. And while everyone was kind of making banana loaves and stuff, I was just murdering people fictionally. And that was the way I kept saying. Like, I was just like, I'm really enjoying writing and I'm just going to go and do like an hour of it just to go into this world of these characters I created. And actually, I really loved it. I found it was just like a safe space, despite the murders. And but it did take me 5 years because of the fact that I was doing a million other things. So it's not like I was, you know, I was doing it also in the car on the way to events and stuff like that. By the end, I was like, oh, I'm finished the last chapter. And so, but it was fun. It was, and I think so. It was, and I really purposefully decided that it wouldn't be a job. It would be something that I love doing, not a job. And if ever it felt like a job and felt too pressured, then I pulled back from it. So my editor, Fran, was really, and so they're the person who kind of steers the book as you're writing it. They'll say like, oh, give us a bit more of that character. Or you actually need to let your dog have a wee. You've had a dog in the car for 4 hours, Steph, and they've not had a wee yet. Oh yeah, good point, Fran. But she was really patient with me. I hadn't even signed a deal with her at this point. And she was like, just take your time. Because I kept saying, I don't want it to feel like a job where I'm like, oh. So I fitted it in just around life, but it was my like hobby, I guess, in a way. That's which I'm good. Very privileged that it could be.
I love the concept of it, you know, the TV presenter mum in a huge crisis, live on-air kidnapping. Where did the inspiration come from? I'm guessing it's never happened to you.
Well, it just came from being on broadcast all the time and wondering what would happen if it got hijacked. So I used to spend my life on BBC Breakfast in these really random locations all over the country. So, you know, I'd be in a field one day and then I'd be in a construction site the next, then I'd be in a factory the next day. And when you're on telly doing a show like that and you're on air for 3 or 4 hours, there are times when you're not obviously on air because they're doing other stuff and you're just sat in a field or sat in a construction site. And I just used to say to my team all the time, what would we do if this got hijacked? And everyone I worked with had different opinions on it. Some were like, oh, I'd run away, Steph, because I'd be too scared. And others were like, I'd be there. And so I just was collecting these thoughts. And I've always been a massive crime fiction fan. So I was collecting all these thoughts. And then I just started like writing them down. And I didn't ever think I was going to write a book. But then I really love a locked room mystery as well. So I was thinking, what if it's the earpiece that gets hijacked, not just someone grabbing around the neck and saying, do this? What if it's an earpiece? Because it always fascinates people when you do telly, how you talk at the same time as having someone talk in your ear.
Yeah, I don't know how you do that.
Yeah, exactly. And everyone says that. So I thought, oh, and then I like the idea of it being in a place which is really, really secure. So where this hijack happens is in a money printing factory. And I've been to one and they are unbelievably secure. And so I like this idea of it gets, she gets hijacked while she's actually in this really secure location interviewing one of the most powerful people in the country. And then, you know, it's all about the why. I didn't know why, actually, for ages. It wasn't until I was halfway through writing it that I'd worked out why the hijack happened. I kept changing my mind and it was actually the characters that gave me the reason of why the hijack happened. And I remember I'm good friends with Anne Cleves, who created Vera, and she said to me she didn't purposefully create Vera. She said she just walked. She needed someone to come into the church and say something, and she said it was Vera who burst in and said something, and then she was like, oh, actually I really like this character and I'm gonna keep going with her. So it was that, it was like I just kind of decided as, and there's a lot of autobiography in there as well, you know, there's a lot of like the lead character Rose is very similar to me in terms of background and everything else, and that, you know, things like being mistaken for as a prostitute at Grimsby Fish Market did happen, and things like being stalked, I've had that. And so there's a lot of things in my life, and also just some of the injustices I've seen in my time, which I could write fictionally without the worry of, you know, being sued or whatever else. So
oh, see, now we've got our last question here, which I need to ask you, but what I really want to ask you is about being mistaken for a prostitute in a fish market, because that sounds much more fun. But instead, I'm going to ask you about Magic Radio's Fuel for Success campaign, which you're involved in, and it's about giving kids a good breakfast, isn't it?
Yeah, so Magic Breakfast is this brilliant charity which basically provides schools, particularly in, you know, high areas of deprivation, with breakfast, free breakfast. And, you know, it sounds really simple, but there are a lot of kids who really struggle through school because they're not getting fed on a morning. And so this is a charity which was set up to help feed them. And they're always looking for new schools to work with and to, you know, and it's dead simple. It's, they've given breakfast for an hour before the school starts, and that they, you know, you can see a massive difference in terms of how those kids then perform during the day, because then they're not hungry. You know, we talk, coming back to my rant earlier about education, we you know, the structure of our society in terms of education means you are very much judged on like whether you do well in exams, and there's a lot of kids who don't have the structure in their lives to do well in exams. It doesn't mean they're not smart, it just means that they haven't got like what they need to be able to do exams well. So that's very, really passionate about it, because they do that, they, you know, they work with schools to help at least set the kids up for the day with food on a morning.
Sounds amazing. Well, Steph, thank you so much for joining us on the Net Mums podcast today. It's been wonderful to chat to you.
Thank you very much. I've loved it. It's great to have a chat. And also, it feels like therapy, doesn't it, when you go through all your foibles as a parent and everything else.
Oh, thank you, Steph.
Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on all social channels, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Just type in Net Mums and you'll find us. And if you liked what you've heard today, we'd love for you to give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button, and share the podcast on all your socials.